call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's a couple of minutes after 9 a.m. Today is January the 23rd. Today we're going to be hearing an overview on the capital budget, Senate Bill 160, the operating budget, Senate Bill 161, and I don't know if we're going to be having any presentation on the mental health budget today, 162. Today we're joined by my co-chair, Senator Stedman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, and Senator Egan. We expect Senator McGuire and Thomas to join us shortly. Today we are joined with us Ms. Karen Rayfield, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, to introduce the governor's budget, the three budget items that I previously mentioned, and possibly the general obligation bonds that the governor had introduced. Tomorrow we will be hearing from Legislative Director David Teal, who will present his view on the governor's budget from his viewpoint. With that, I'll turn it over to Karen Rayfield for her presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for Governor Parnell. With me this morning is John Boucher, our senior economist. Also in the room is Kelly O'Sullivan, who is our new chief budget analyst for OMB, and Tyson Gallagher, who's our capital budget coordinator. I also wanted to say in the packet for today's hearing, I included a staff contact list so that you have the names and assignments of the staff in our office that deal with the different budgets. And certainly we are available to you at any time should you have questions or need assistance. I also included in the packet today copies of the PowerPoint slides that I'll be going through and a December 15 fiscal summary. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the invitation to be here and talk about the governor's budget. It does, the overview will touch on all three of the budget bills you mentioned, and we will talk briefly also about the GO bond package that the governor is proposing. When the governor released the budget in December, he framed the discussion around results, and this is an important part of the discussion for us to have, to be accountable for the public dollars that we spend and be able to communicate what the state is getting for the investment that it's making in the various programs and services. It also needs to be a meaningful tool for our state agencies and program managers to link the budget to those results and to be able to have targets and strategies for continually improving our service delivery. Governor Parnell's vision for Alaska is economic growth and strengthening families. Alaska's future rests on responsibly developing our natural resources and creating jobs and economic opportunity for our families. This budget supports the governor's vision in several key priority areas. In developing the budget, the governor has consistently used guiding principles: fiscal restraint to spend less and save more for the future, strategic investments to invest in infrastructure to grow Alaska's economy, cash reserves. With declining oil production, we will need to rely on cash reserves to provide state services over time. At the end of calendar year 2011, we had nearly $13 billion in the constitutional budget reserve and the statutory budget reserve. And then, as I mentioned, to focus on results, those key agency missions, core services, and how well we're doing. The governor's budget priorities are based on the constitutional and statutory framework, resource development to create jobs for Alaskans, education to prepare our students for success, public safety for safe homes and strong families, transportation and infrastructure that support economic development across the state, and to strengthen our military missions and support military families. Slide 5 of the presentation shows the revenue projected for FY 12 and 13, the proposed spending plan, and the projected balances at the end of each fiscal year. As you can see, in FY 12, the revenue is projected to be over $8.9 billion, with the spending plan currently of just over $7 billion. projecting a balance at the end of fiscal year 12 of over $1.9 billion. In FY 2013, you'll see over $8.2 billion in revenue. The governor's proposed spending plan for FY 13 is $6.4 billion, with projected balance of almost $1.8 billion.
Do you have an estimate of how much a price of barrel oil that is to get us to the $1.2 billion for FY 13?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have that. The price of oil projected for FY 13 is $109.47.
And that is exactly what it averaged the previous year.
It's very close, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I think this is the first year that it's ever been expected to average over $100 a year, although it was around $109 last year. It wasn't anticipated to be that, and I think this is the first year that an administration has come forward with a budget that will average over $100.
Mr. Chairman, and at the governor's proposed spending level, the $6.4 billion, we would need just under $97 barrel to balance. Well, we do.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarity on that. Maybe you can have Ms. Rayfield modify that answer to break even on the operating budget, excluding capital. So we concentrate on the take note of the break-even price for our operating budget, because the capital budget we can adjust substantially.
Mr. Rayfield, do you have that number?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Seven, I don't have that number, but we can certainly get that for you.
Thank you.
Well, what we do know, though, Mr. Chairman, if I might continue, is that with the fall revenue forecast, of course, the numbers are higher. Projected revenue is higher than we saw in the spring. We know that over 91% of our revenue, unrestricted general fund revenue, comes from oil production. We know that oil production is declining. And we do know that with these high oil prices, it does give us an opportunity to save for the future. The next chart, Mr. Chairman, is an illustration of the fund sources that make up the FY13 budget request before you. You can see that unrestricted general fund of $6.43 billion represents about 53% of the total state budget requested. Federal funds of $2.9 billion are about 24% of the total. The permanent fund is roughly 12%, $1.48 billion, and this is for dividends and inflation proofing. Designated general funds of $834.5 million is roughly 7% of the total, and designated general funds includes things like the university receipts at about $340 million, general fund program receipts of about $114 million, and then finally other funds, $505.5 million or 4% of the budget. And this would include things like permanent fund receipts that we use to manage and invest Alaska's permanent fund. That's about $126 million. The international airport funds of $111 million, and statutory designated program receipts of $66.4 million. The next several slides, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to highlight for you some of the items that are included in the request by the priority areas that I talked about earlier. Under resource development, jobs for Alaskans is, of course, a priority for all of us. The governor's requesting $28.5 million under roads to resources. There are some specific items in this number, $10 million for the road to Umiak for the continued environmental work to access resources in the foothills area of Alaska, $10 million for the road to Tanana, $4 million to continue our efforts to open up the Ambler Mining District, and $4.5 million for the Klondike Highway out of Skagway and other resource roads. We're requesting your support for $3.3 million to continue our efforts to streamline permitting.
On that point, will that number change or be affected by the coastal zone proposition that's before the voters if it does pass?
Mr. Chairman, is this specific to the streamlining permit?
Yes.
Streamlined permitting. Mr. Chairman, this request continues the Department of Natural Resources information system to take all of our permittings and automate that. It's a unified permitting system. I don't know that that would change necessarily depending on what happens with the coastal zone, but it would certainly be able to incorporate whatever permitting requirements we have.
But I think the coastal zone bill also brings us back pre-Murkowski, and a lot of the streamlining that existed prior to that would go back to the other departments, so that it may have an impact on the streamlining, the way the mechanics of the proposition is presently before the voters, if it gets the sanctions by the lieutenant governor.
Mr.
I wonder,
Chairman,
if you might check on that first.
We certainly can. I know there were a number of things that would not be able to be determined prior to the action actually taking place. We'd have to make adjustments. Mr. Chairman, we've also requested $2.7 million for strategic minerals and rare earth elements assessment statewide, and $1.1 million for shale oil assessment statewide. A couple of items that aren't highlighted on the slide but I'd like to mention for you is a request for $3.7 million for a statewide digital mapping effort, and that will leverage potentially up to $12 million of federal funds. As you know, elevation data is very important to resource development, navigation, aviation safety, and emergency response, and we're hoping that you will be supportive of this request. We mentioned earlier that there's also funding in here at a continuation level for the Alaska Gasline Inducement Act, a GA reimbursement of $60 million, and also for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation at $21 million. And as you know, the governor has asked that the parties come together and consolidate around a gas line project. We know that there's going to be considerable discussion this session about that, and we will make adjustments in the budget as that develops. Under education funding, the governor's budget includes full funding for K-12 and pupil transportation based on the current statutory formula. It also requests forward funding of K-12 and pupil transportation for fiscal year 2014. The current statutory formula for education has a base student allocation of $5,680, and we also are including the fifth and final year of the implementation of the district cost factor study. Also under education funding for the teacher retirement system assistance payments, the total for teachers retirement system in FY13 is $302.7 million. This does include about $21 million for the University of Alaska. As you know, the state pays the difference between the TERS rate of 12.56 and the actuarial determined rate of 52.67%. When you compare what we are paying for the TERS assistance in the current year and the projection of increase for next year and their PERS that would help support school districts, the increase is over $76 million. That's roughly equivalent to a $300 increase in the base student allocation.
Going back to the full funding and forward funding of K through 12, I understand that this is full funding without any action by the legislature to increase the BSA. But I've heard from many of my colleagues across the state that there's grave concern about the potential reduction in staff. Here in Juneau, I guess they're facing close to a $5 million shortfall, and it said that that would entail eliminating a whole school bus of teachers. In Anchorage, we're seeing north of $10 million in shortfalls. Again, additional reductions that are being contemplated, and I believe that this is the case throughout the state of Alaska, because last year we had increased the budget for education from K through 12 on a temporary basis. That was one time, and they were eliminated. And I think as a result of that, that has compounded the shortfall for school districts. And I'm wondering if your office has received concerns from those school districts as well.
Mr. Chairman, yes, our office has received a number of letters from school districts that are very concerned about not increasing the statutory formula for the base student allocation. I think part of the discussion needs to be that over the last 5 years, we've seen a significant increase in education funding, over $180 million. The governor is very concerned, particularly with the declining oil production, that building in statutory entitlements then, of course, would require, regardless of what's happening with our revenue picture, that we would need to continue to fund at a higher level. He's indicated that he is interested in looking at some more targeted approach, such as what the legislature did in the current year to address fixed costs, such as fuel or utilities, and but not actually building that into an ongoing formula. I think it's going to be a continuing discussion the entire session, but I know that's where we started with our budget in December.
Well, that bill is has passed the Senate. The Senate Finance Committee introduced that bill to address high fuel costs, not only for school districts, but also for municipalities, and that is sitting over currently over in the other body. But I think Senator Thomas, do you have a question?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. somewhat related issue: the PERS TERS unfunded liability. It's my understanding that a couple of $1 billion payment towards that liability could have a substantial future impact on our payments made there, and I wonder if there's been any consideration to take a look at offering that as a suggestion. We're talking about billions of dollars potentially saved in the relatively near term, if you look at 5 to 10 years being near term.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, there has been a great deal of discussion about what options are available to address the retirement unfunded liability. The governor did actually visit with the retirement board in September. There's been ongoing work with, of course, legislative finance, the Department of Administration, and the ARM board over the past several months. I think if you look at the resolution that was adopted by the ARM board in December, there's a number of things that they are interested in pursuing, and I think we just need to spend some more time going through those and what's available to us, because there are several different approaches that you could take.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you for that response. And do you anticipate some activity, yet not maybe this year? Is that what we're looking at, or are you thinking that there may be some opportunity yet this year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I think there's always opportunity. It's early in session, and you know, I know that this is of huge concern to all of us.
Thank you.
And I've had some dialogue with members of this body, and I know our caucus has addressed the issue, and the Finance Committee may delve into this if nothing comes from the administration. So I think that will be addressed. What action remains to be seen.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, continuing the Alaska Performance Scholarship, the FY13 budget requests $8 million to continue to fund the Alaska Performance Scholarships in the next year. As you know, nearly 2,400 students qualified in the first year of the Alaska Performance Scholarship. I know that the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education is going to be delivering a report to you this week that gives you more data and information on this first inaugural class, the kids who qualified, where they're from, and a lot of information that I think you will find very interesting. We've requested $61 million under school construction for two projects. As you know, earlier this fall, there was successful resolution of the Kasaili litigation with a pledge to support funding for five of the highest priority rural schools. The first two school construction projects on that list are Imonic and Kaliganek, and both are in the budget before you.
And I have a question on that. On the settlement of that case, it was said that the other schools were going to be coming next year and possibly the year after, stretching those out. And I was wondering if those were going to be separate financial requests above and beyond the requirements of the legislation that passed this body and the other body 2 years ago that requires I think it's approximately $36 million to be put into a fund. Is that the case, that those are two separate and distinct appropriations?
Mr. Chairman, in the 13 budget, we have capitalized the new Rural Education Attendance Area Fund with about $35 million. And we propose to use the $35 million to help support the two projects that are in front of you. Certainly, the legislature could choose to fund the $35 million and fund the schools without utilizing the fund, but the way that it's in the budget before you, we're utilizing the fund this year.
That was not the intent. The intent was to fund, from my recollection, the 10 schools, and then to set aside the funds on an ongoing basis to address the schools thereafter. And it was never the intent to utilize the fund to meet the obligation of the first 10 schools, you know, and I think that there are four left. So that was not the intent, and I guess I'll have to talk to the litigants on the Kasaili case regarding that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand it, the five schools that are on the list are the first five schools that are on the department's list this year, and we expect those to continue to be the projects that will be funded in response to the Kasaili litigation. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, we've requested just under $24 million for the first 14 projects on the Department of Education school major maintenance list. The governor's budget continues to...
Yes, Senator Stedman.
On that subject, Mr. Chairman, on the deferred maintenance list, we've got that, you know, the published list, and the governor went down and made his appropriation recommendations. How firm is the administration in holding a line on that particular line item appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I think that the administration is open, of course, to including more of those projects, if that's a direction the legislature would like to go. What we're hoping for is some agreement on the overall level of spending and then what those priorities might be included in that overall spending level.
And that gives me some concern, because last year the legislature did pass a larger number, and the governor vetoed a substantial portion of those major maintenance dollars, and included was about $7 million that Lower Kuskokwim School District was going to be using to fix their lines. And obviously they didn't get the funds, and it's hard to say whether or not they would have been able to utilize the dollars to fix the much-needed water and sewer lines in Bethel for the Lower Kuskokwim School District. But during the month of January, with 30 days of 20 to 30 below chill factor weather, the school system, water system froze up and resulted in the closure of the school for all the students there. And it was just opened up, it was closed prior to Christmas and was finally opened up, I think, on Tuesday. So I think we are not as wise in trying to address the maintenance issues when, in fact, I'm getting the figures now, we may be looking at an expense of three to four times as much money if we had approved it the first time around. So I think that we need to give serious thought to the projects that are on the major maintenance list.
Understand, Mr. Chairman. Should I continue?
Please proceed.
Public safety. The request in front of you, of course, continues the governor's efforts to establish safe homes and strong families across Alaska. Year three of the initiative to eliminate domestic violence and sexual assault in our state. The Choose Respect initiative request is just under $12 million in total in three broad areas, the first being prevention and intervention of $3.3 million. This includes public education and awareness, community-level prevention projects and rural pilot projects, $3.2 million for support for survivors, and this includes shelter services, services for children who are exposed to violence, trauma services for victims, and housing. And $5.3 million is requested under law enforcement to continue our efforts to provide village public safety officers. This will include another 15 village public safety officers and a support trooper, housing, a cold case prosecutor, and also assistance to victims with limited English proficiency. 64 communities held Choose Respect rallies in 2011, and the goal for 2012 is another 100 communities that will send a strong message to support victims and survivors. Governor's also requesting your support for $4.9 million for emergency food supplies. This is in conjunction with the appropriation you approved this year that is allowing for generators and water purification. Together with these funds, it will help communities provide critical emergency services in the event of a large-scale disaster. And also an interior...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe on that subject, Mr. Chairman, we can just have a little brief synopsis on, as this is our first introduction to the budget, what this, you know, is this food supply issue, is it going to be dispersed around the state, or is it going to be, how's it going to be handled? Concentrated in one area and flowing out, or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, it will be distributed, but only into a few key areas. It's really designed for larger scale disaster. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and their Office of Disaster Preparedness, I'm sure, would be able to give you specific details on that. But it really is designed to serve a large group, a large population. It could be flown in to certain areas, depending on the location, to assist in the event of a large-scale disaster.
Senator Stedman.
On a lighter note, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like the record to reflect if we had a disaster, dinner's on the table twice a day in Southeast when the tide goes out, so we're in pretty good shape down here.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The
tsunami.
In the Department of Public Safety, also we're requesting your support for the purchase of a search and rescue helicopter in Interior Alaska. As you know, the geography and the extreme weather conditions in Interior Alaska create enormous challenges for responding to emergencies. This helicopter will help the troopers respond and access remote areas and be able to successfully complete these critical missions. In the area of transportation and
Yes, Senator Olson.
Mr. Rayfield, on that particular thing about the helicopter going up there, is this $3 million just for the purchase of the helicopter?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes, that would be for a turbine helicopter.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
As a person who's operated helicopters before, there's obviously other costs that go into that. I was wondering if you had those ancillary costs that were going to be involved with that, with maintenance personnel, parts, a hangar to go ahead and house the helicopter, as well as the training for, if it is indeed for search and rescue. I do fly for search and rescue. We put a fair amount of training into the pilots as well as the medics that are there. Do you have numbers for those as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes, we do. The Department of Public Safety has a nice white paper on the helicopter and those costs, and we can get that to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under transportation infrastructure in support of economic development across the state, we have over $1 billion in statewide infrastructure projects requested in the capital budget, over $938 million specifically for highways, airports, the Marine Highway. We're requesting $32 million for municipal water and sewer projects that also leverages local dollars. We're requesting $23 million for 10 municipal harbor grant projects that also leverages local funds. And there's about $51 million in for village safe water projects as well. The governor's also requesting your consideration of a port geo bond package of $350 million that includes a request for funding for the Port of Anchorage, the Port McKenzie Rail Extension, ports in Bristol Bay, Seward, Ammonick, and Ketchikan. As you know, with the governor's focus on economic development, these projects represent a regional balance. They're known in that they've received previous funding from the legislature, and they will contribute to the growth in the region. We understand that the geobond proposal is a starting point, and we do expect that there will be a lot of discussion about that and about the specific projects that would go into a port bond package. But this is the starting point for that conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments on the Harbor Grant Fund. It's noted that, you know, when we put that process in the works here 4 or 5 years ago, we were targeting $10 million a year for 10 years and bring our harbors back, and we got behind on the appropriation cycle on that due to, you know, changing oil prices and other issues. But it certainly, people have taken notice that the governor stepped up and tried to catch up and fund that. So I think that's a real positive. On the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, a $25 million, I think the legislature there was looking at $50 million a year. I'm just kind of wondering what the concept or the thoughts there of the administration is on that particular one. And then on the power cost equalization, we've funded that quite heavily the last few years. We need, Mr. Chairman, I think, take a look at the status of that little endowment and make sure that is set up for the future. If we can have some brief comments on those items, please.
Thank you, Mr.
Field.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman. Yes, on the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, our request is at $25 million. As you know, Alaska Energy Authority has just completed their round 5 review of projects. We expect their list of projects that they're recommending for funding, it may be in excess of the $25 million, and that would be part of the conversation that we would have with you. When we put our budget together in December, they're still in the process of evaluating those projects. We know over the period of time that the Energy Authority has been managing the Renewable Energy Grant Program, I think they've done an excellent job of doing that evaluation and really bringing forward projects that they believe will be viable. And as they go through their phase process, if they're not, they're letting us know that the project shouldn't go forward. So it's good information, and we're certainly willing to talk about that when their list comes out.
Well, I do sit on that committee representing the Senate, and Representative Bill Thomas represents the House, and that legislation is to sunset this next year, and there's going to be legislation to extend it for 10 more years. But the problem that the committee has is that the state has a goal of getting to 50% renewable energy by the year 2025, and at a minimum we need to step up and continue at the $50 million level. That's what the committee is interested in accomplishing. Otherwise, we are going to fall way short of the 50% renewable energy by 2025. If we have that, we should pursue that, or we should drop that and not give false expectations to the people of Alaska. But I think it's a target worthy of trying to accomplish. But it is going to take more than $25 million a year.
Mr. Chairman, just if I might, in response, certainly renewable energy is going to be a key element of reaching that 50% electricity generated from renewable sources by 2025. Another project, of course, that's going to help with that as well is Susitna, the Susitna Watana project, and that I believe there's going to be some briefings on the progress on that project. So I think all of these pieces together are going to be very important for us.
Thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a breakdown between the highways and the aviation dollars, the $938 million, which goes which way, which is aviation, which is highways?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, we can certainly get that. I don't have it right here in my notes, but there's it includes the, of course, our federal highways and federal aviation dollars and the state general funds that match that. So we can get you those breakdowns.
And one other.
Senator Thomas.
And also regarding energy and weatherization, renewable energy grants, et cetera, any specific plan to reduce the costs of fuels in the rural areas and in the northern area, specifically the rural areas? And Fairbanks has been identified as having some of the highest costs in the country for a city, and obviously many of the villages are double that in some cases, as far as, and it's not just the cost of the fuel, it's the temperatures and the consumption. So anything in the governor's plan to address those issues?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I think all of these pieces are going to be necessary in order to reduce the cost of power to Alaskans. Some of it is going to be able to be done sooner than others, but I think that they're all important. With the projects under the Renewable Energy Fund, the projects that have been completed, they're looking at significant improvements in diesel displacement. If you look at some of the projects that AVEC has been working on to increase the efficiency of rural power systems and generation, that has helped result in reduced costs to the consumers. But it's really it's going to be a combination of all of these things over a period of time that are going to help reduce costs for all Alaskans.
I certainly understand that. I was just looking at the concept, though, of, you know, recently I believe it might have been Homer, they replaced with propane with natural gas, and they had a reduction of about 75% in their heating costs. So those are huge numbers when you look at it. And we have this almost a statewide problem here, and looking more at the idea of projects that have a more substantial impact on things rather than just weatherization. Those are all great projects and programs. They've done a great deal in going the right way, but actually it's the type of fuel that we're burning in most places that is creating the issue. And of course the in-state gas pipeline, depending on what happens with it, is 8 or 9 years away, and it is not necessarily designed to even deliver cheaper fuels to the rural areas. So that's more what I'm looking for, some kind of longer range, bigger project that actually has a serious and dramatic impact on the cost of fuels.
And I would agree, Senator Thomas. You know, I think that you had mentioned Susitna, but that, once it's built, will only provide 50% of the electricity needs of the rail belt. You know, there's the other 50%, but the largest expenditure to many people in the state of Alaska is heating their homes. And as I said earlier on in the beginning of this meeting, we averaged for the first time over $100 a barrel of oil. You know, and I think that if we go back and check with the corporations that are in the state, you will find out last year that they probably had some of the highest corporate earnings in their corporate history. But as a result of the barrel of oil being $110 a barrel, I would assume, and we're going to try to verify this, is that the people that are on heating fuel for heating their homes, they've experienced the highest heating costs in their lifetime, heating their homes this last year. And although you tout the renewable energy program, the vast majority of that is for electricity. And the committee is struggling with the fact that what should we do with heating costs. And I know, looking at this booklet, which is provided to us by the Legislative Fiscal Analysis, the overview of the governor's requests, on one page where it shows the state of Alaska's fiscal summary, beginning of fiscal year 12, we had unrestricted savings of $16.1 billion. At the end of FY13, we will have an undesignated savings amount of $22.3 billion. While the price of oil continues to rise, the state of Alaska is benefiting greatly by that, but the people that are dependent upon heating their homes on diesel are experiencing record amounts. Many of these individuals are spending over 60% of their disposable income on energy. And for us to ignore that, I think, is a grave mistake, and I would concur with Senator Thomas that we need to look at what can be done in that regard for the citizens of the state of Alaska. You know, I think that if you would look at your energy consumption, you're probably spending less than 10%. If you even doubled yours, you would have great concerns. 50%, you'd be very, very concerned. If you're going north of 50%, something needs to be done. You know, I think that that is probably the single most point of concern that the vast majority of Alaskans are having. They're depleting their savings, and the costs continue to rise, while at the same time the state of Alaska is saving billions and billions of dollars. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also wanted to note that and particularly I know an area that's of concern to you is the funding for the low-income heating assistance program. And as you know, in both this year and in the 13 budget, we are proposing to address low-income heating assistance and also the state heating assistance program. Department of Health and Social Services is reviewing their numbers for the number of applications they've received this year and the benefit levels that individuals are qualifying for, and we'll be making adjustments in our budget as we find that necessary to do so. In deferred maintenance, the governor's budget proposes to fund year three of an effort to address deferred maintenance in state facilities across the state. We have over 2,200 facilities statewide, about 17 million square feet of space with a replacement value in excess of $7.8 billion. What we're seeing as a result of the first 2 years of our deferred maintenance program is that we're doing a better job of identifying and defining deferred maintenance projects. We have facilities managers actually working together, sharing information and helping to design better maintenance programs. We have are developing facility condition index standards, and at the end of this year, all of the first year funding will be expended and the year two funding will be in the hopper to be out on the street. We know that this has allowed agencies to actually plan for and complete deferred maintenance projects, having some idea of the amount of funding they'll have available, so it's been very helpful. And I'm sure as you go through the individual budgets, they departments can update you on the progress that they've made with their deferred maintenance funds. In the area of military support, of course, we continue to support the Army and Air Guard facilities across the state. Our Veterans Services and Outreach Program will be continuing the work to open the Veterans Cemetery in Fairbanks, and the first full year of operations for that will be in 2014, but you'll see a small operating increase for it in the 2013 request in front of you. And then finally, for the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, we are asking for $8 million in state general funds to support the corporation. They are working diligently to secure ongoing customers for the launch facility, and in order for them to do that, they need a viable operation. So you'll see that $8 million in the request in front of you. The pie chart is just a visual of what we've been talking about, the total $12 billion budget. I just would like to briefly talk about this chart. On the left-hand side of the chart is roughly half of the budget, and that half of the budget is what we consider generally to be non-discretionary. It's our formula programs, our permanent fund, our statewide appropriations. Those items that are on the right-hand side of the pie chart are generally what we talk about is being discretionary in terms of the agency, state agency budgets, and capital spending. On agency non-formula, we've broken out specifically the general fund piece of that, which is about $2.2 billion, and that's really where we spend a lot of time talking with departments as they come forward with their requests and trying to hold the line on state spending. If I could just spend a few minutes on the left-hand side of the chart, Mr. Chairman. We've talked about the K-12 education formula of about $1.17 billion, 9.7% of the total funds budget. This includes funding for all 54 school districts, including Mount Edgecombe, serving approximately 129,000 students statewide. Other formula programs you'll see is just under $2 billion, or 16% of the budget. This includes Medicaid is the biggest piece of that at about $1.64 billion. Other formulas in there include public assistance, foster care and adoptions, power cost equalization, and shared taxes. Cost drivers for Medicaid, as we all know, includes the number of people who actually enroll and who utilize the services, and then, of course, the cost of providing the services. Our Medicaid budget is up $130 million in the projection in the request in front of you, and about 45 of that is general fund. Under statewide appropriations, the $1.44 billion, just under 12% of the budget, that includes our retirement system unfunded liability, the $610 million we talked about earlier. Our current unfunded liability is just at $11 billion. $6.9 billion of that is PERS, and 4.1 is TERS. $400 million in that statewide appropriation is targeted for tax credits. We have debt service in there of $301 million, which is down just slightly from the current year due to...
Tax credits, 400. How much did we include in last year's budget? Remind me.
Mr. Chairman, it's $400 million. It's the same. We've included a continuation level on that. And part of our challenge there has been just the timing of the payments of the eligible credits and when those come in. The Department of Revenue, of course, will be giving you a report on that very soon, and we certainly can make adjustments to that number as we get more from them.
Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, I was going to mention that we'll take a look at that at some time in the future and break down those credits, I would imagine, and take a good look at them, because I think we have a virtually open-ended credit system coming against the Treasury. So, and I'd also like to just remind everybody that this 400 is only half the credits. That doesn't include roughly another 400 that's netted out. There's actually 800 embedded in the system, roughly.
Annually.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, also in the statewide appropriation is our $60 million for revenue sharing. That's the replenishment of the fund on an annual basis that goes out to our incorporated and unincorporated communities around the state. Permanent fund dividends, roughly 12% of the total budget. This includes $572 million estimated for the dividends, and also $888 million for the inflation proofing. The capital budget is just under 15% of the total budget at $1.8 billion. I've already highlighted a number of things that we've requested in that budget, so I won't go back through those again. And in the operating budget, if we could just go to the next.
Can we go back to the capital budget for a moment? It seems that this continues to increase every year that the governor's requesting. And I wonder if you could provide the committee with a history of how much the governor has requested before the legislature. I know this is Senator Stedman's preview, but I would like to see that. And because I have some concerns because the governor wants to keep the level the same, but he keeps on increasing his, and that leaves a lot less for the legislature to consider. So if you could provide that history of what the governor has requested during his tenure before the legislature.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we could do that. On the operating budget, just to highlight a few things that are significant, we did delete 288 vacant positions in the budget that's in front of you. These were full-time and part-time, long-term vacant. For the most part, they had been vacant 11 months or more. If a department felt really strongly about a position that they wanted to keep, we allowed some swapping. But for the most part, you'll see that they were the long-term vacant positions. Education funding, again, is a highlight in our operating budget. The Medicaid growth of $130.5 million. Salary and benefit increases of a total of $66 million, about 34 of that is general fund. And those are for our bargained agreements and health insurance costs and geographic differentials. Goose Creek, we are proposing to open Goose Creek in the FY13 budget, $29.1 million, and there are 192 positions associated with Goose Creek. The department has will be transitioning prisoners from out of state into the new facility each quarter in FY13, with the final group coming in FY2014. So the full out-of-state contract will be spent for operations of Goose Creek. So that's a phase-in plan that I'm certain the department can go through with you. Another significant item, of course, is tourism marketing.
Number 29.1 million for Goose Creek a phased-in number? And if so, what do you anticipate the annual cost without the phase-in on a full year's operation?
Mr. Chairman, the full operating cost of Goose Creek, I believe, is right around $50 million. So there will be I think there's somewhere between $23 and $24 million in the out-of-state contract that will go towards the ongoing operations of Goose Creek once we no longer have that out-of-state contract.
Senator Stedman?
I think on that point, Mr. Chairman, I think that doesn't include debt service.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman, the debt service on Goose Creek is about $17.8 million a year.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
And tourism marketing, I think I mentioned that, Mr. Chairman, that goes to the Department of Commerce.
Senator Regan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rayfield, on the $16 million, does that include the industry match, or are you anticipating any industry match?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Egan, the $16 million is general fund, and it would go to the Department of Commerce. And Commerce, I know, has been working with the industry on their tourism marketing plan. The industry receipts, I believe it's about $2.7 million, have never directly come to the state. Under the Qualified Trade Association agreement, the statutory agreement, they generated revenue that was then matched with state revenue. We're not proposing this through the QTA agreement. It would be state general fund for the program.
Senator Egan?
For the total amount then, $16 million in tariff state, no industry match.
Chairman, Senator Egan, not to the state's budget. That does not mean that the industry would not be contributing and to their project.
And last year, in the agreement, this was all this money was given to Department of Commerce, and Department of Commerce is handling the marketing. Did you increase the number of employees in Department of Commerce, or is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Egan, we have not increased the number of employees. It's been through contracted work. The department, Commissioner Bell and her staff, have really strong backgrounds in tourism marketing. So I think because of the strength of the individual she has working for her, she's able to manage that. I don't know that it's a good long-term solution, but it's but she's working really hard to make it work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Reed. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, on slide 14, this chart, I think, is an attempt to highlight how important the state budget is to Alaskans and why we spend so much time on it. 60% of the state budgets goes out to communities and organizations and individuals through a number of grants, direct payments, capital spending. This includes Medicaid, permanent fund dividends, school funding, revenue sharing, the unfunded liability payments. It's a significant investment that is important for us to have this kind of discussion about. 21% is for purchase services, and this includes travel and professional services and hotels and fuel and equipment. A lot of that is internal to state departments, but a lot of that is purchased directly from Alaskan businesses and vendors. And then 19% of the total budget is our state salaries for state employees. So, Mr. Chairman, in wrap-up.
Senator Stedman.
Oh, sorry.
Just a quick point on that last subject, and I got a couple of questions. Be interesting to look at that slide and allocate it by population areas around the state. For instance, the fishing industry is more important on the coast than it is in Fairbanks. You know, government's more important in Juneau than it is in Ketchikan or Sitka, that type of stuff. I think the distribution of the expenditures from the state are you know, concentrated in particular areas. But with that, maybe we can take that up at another day, or take a look at that data sometime. But supplemental. The FY12 supplemental due on the 31st of January. Maybe you can give the committee a feel for what you think the supplemental is going to look like. And then on the 15th of February, there's amendments deadline for the budget. And what you so far, I know it's only the first day of the second week, but what you kind of feel is coming at the committee in that regard also.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I can tell you that the first 30 days for me seems like a sprint because we have the supplemental that's due to you on the 15th day and the amendments. We have been working very hard on that. Clearly, there are things if there are things that come up in the supplemental that were unanticipated, then it requires us to look really carefully at what we've included in the 13 budget and whether or not that needs to be aligned with that. So we're kind of working on both things right at the moment. I don't think that you will see anything particularly surprising in the supplemental budget. You know, our placeholder annually is about $50 million. You know, certainly we have things like fire suppression and disaster preparedness. None of that is a surprise to you. The dollar amounts are a little bit lower than they've been in the past. Their Department of Law is working on some specific settlements that will be incorporated in there. So I don't think there's going to be anything that's particularly surprising to you, but we're looking closely at that so that we know what we've got in the 13 budget is it will align with that supplemental request. So I can't really give you a whole lot yet, but we will turn it in to you on the 15th day and the 30th day.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the education budget, although I was looking on page 2, and I'm not quite sure the numbers line up, but I don't expect them to exactly line up. But it says fully fund K-12 education and pupil transportation. I was wondering if you might comment on what you consider fully funding, because as I look at the budget for all of the departments, education, I think, was the smallest increase. I forget what the percentage was. You probably know it off the top of your head, but compared to others. So it's curious to me that we'd call it full funding and how that same wording would associate itself with what happens with those other budgets. Were those considered fully funded? And if in fact we took those other budgets and reduced them percentage-wise across the board, how the layoffs per personnel would fall out with education versus those other departments? Because some of them increased fairly large percentages, smaller ones albeit, so the money was a lot less money overall. But just looking at it as kind of a fairness situation on a statewide basis and on a operation type basis overall, if we had flattened all of those budgets out, how would those compare with education, if we hadn't just took them as they are, comparing the small percentage of increase for education compared to some of the larger ones, and what impact that would have on the employees and the personnel in those other departments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I'm not going to be able to give you a number just off the top of my head, but if you look at, let me start with the full funding question. what we consider full funding in terms of the budget in front of you is based on the statutory entitlement. So it is fully funded based on the statutory formula. When you compare FY12 on that line to the governor's request in 13, you'll see that the one time, the $20 million that was provided for schools is not included in that line. Generally, the school enrollment was pretty flat. Actually, it dropped just a tiny bit, but basically flat in terms of enrollment. There were some changes in the increase in the required local contribution at the school, at the local level, so that actually reduced the amount of state aid that was necessary to fund, again, the entitlement in the formula. So in order to, because that captures, it's a formula program. So in order for those increases to occur, of course, a bill would need to pass increasing the formula entitlement or some other targeted funding that goes into the formula. So that's the first part. In terms of the state agency growth, again, a big piece of that was formula related to Medicaid funding. Clearly, if we were going to flat fund the state budget, you wouldn't have seen increases requested for our public safety or additional VPSOs. If we had not funded the salary increases, that's about $66 million of the roughly $2.2 billion personal services lines. You would see a different kind of budget in front of you had we not included those numbers, but I can't tell you that those total impacts would be.
Well, we're talking about salaries. Could you address the judicial salary increases? I believe that they were not included in your budget, and why is that?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, it's not the administration's intent to short fund the judicial retirement system. There is no, as I understand it, there's no statutory requirement like there was in SB 125 for PERS and TERS employers. We have in the past, I believe, funded the past service costs as just a lump sum in the budget. We talked with the court system about incorporating those costs into their the rates into their personal services budget. They did incorporate a portion of the normal service costs into their personal services line, but they didn't include all of that. So we're going to be talking with them about that, but it was never our intention to short fund their system.
Senator Stedman.
On that subject, and I got an original question, but I think, Mr. Chairman, we should take a look at the courts. I think we tried to fully fund them once, if not twice, and we continue to struggle with that issue, so we need to take a look at that. And then back to Senator Thomas's question, it'd be also, I think, informative for the committee to look at the shifts in student population, even though it may on an aggregate level look fairly flat. I've got one district in my community now, soon to be inherited by my colleague, it dropped 40 kids, and it was less than 500 students to start with. So I think there might be some shifts going on around the state over the last few years, even though the overall student count might look the same. And I think it'd be informative for the committee to have a feel for that.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Ms. Rayfield, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rayfield, as we're talking about some of the judicial possible expenditures out there, it's my understanding that there's a cost of differential for the geographic locations for some of the rural judges. Is this in the budget? And the concern that I have is we've got, I think, three judges that are going to be replaced, and the pool of applicants seems to the breadth would be widened if we were able to go ahead and offer those applicants a cost of living differential out in the rural areas. Is this in the budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, geographic differentials are incorporated into our projections for our personal services costs, and I'm going to look at John, but I think they're included for the court system as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue, so the bill that's coming through, that is in your budget as well? I don't have the number here in front of me. I think it's 144 that has to do with the the cost of the differential salaries that are out there that would enhance some of the rural judges.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the budget wouldn't include something that's pending right now. It would just only include what our current differentials would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further questions? Ms. Rayfield?
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. I just want to say that it takes a lot of work to bring the budget to you. I know that you're going to spend an incredible amount of time on it. We appreciate that. We certainly appreciate the work that David Teal and his staff do to put together the overview every year, and it's a great tool for you, and we appreciate it as well. So anyway, thank you for your time, and look forward to working with you.
Do we have any comments from John Boucher, the senior economist on the budget? Sitting there patiently, we'll give you 20 minutes.
I think I'll decline, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had two short questions here. The Veterans Cemetery, $2 million, certainly appreciate that, but there's been a delay in it, and my understanding has been explained to me that with that delay, actually, we will pick up another $1 million in federal money. I understand that's a small thing in the course of the budget here, but is that your understanding, or are you even aware of that at this point in time? That's kind of
a detail. Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I do know that there were some delays in the project, and that the $2 million that we're showing on this slide are federal funds that are available to continue the work on that. The operations, though, will be state general funds, and a portion of that, you'll see a portion of that in the 2013 budget and the full amount in 2014.
But if I may, you're not aware of any additional money that comes based on this delay. I've been assured by folks with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs that there was an additional $1 million that is being made available from the federal government, not necessarily due to the delay, but with the delay happening, that causes that to take place. So I was just curious if you had.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator. They would need to confirm that for you. It could be part of that $2 million, but they'll have to confirm that for you.
And then if I might just one other item. When we talk about differentials, cost differentials around the state, there was a study done just a few years ago. I forget what year it actually was completed in, two or maybe 3 years ago, I guess, and I was just shocked at the reductions that were made based on the way that the study was conducted. It was just unbelievable to me, and then particularly when you receive information, particularly like I said, with the interior and Fairbanks being signaled out as one of the most expensive cities in the country, comparable to San Francisco and New York, I believe, yet the cost differential there was reduced in the contracts for employees. So I think it's probably time well served to take a general look again at the state of Alaska and get a better feel for just what costs are. I know that one was kind of a hurried project, but I would think that it would be worth doing again just to establish, because I've had troopers in various areas in the interior say that, you know, they're not going to serve in those areas anymore. They're going to gravitate to Anchorage is what it amounts to, where we, you know, where things are generally more available, where you don't have to drive 150 miles round trip, 300 miles to get your groceries, etc., and fuel costs are greater, etc. So anyhow, just something to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rayfield, the presentation noted that the governor has hundreds of millions of dollars in his budget, you know, under existing statute for the oil tax credits. Are you aware, or if you presented, or are you aware if the governor is cognizant of the material that was presented to the legislature this fall from Pedro Van Meers, our international expert on oil tax policy, that Alaska is an outlier, that we are overly generous in his professional and considered opinion with tax credits for the oil industry to incentivize desired behavior, that we give away way too much. He basically said we were crazy to give away the amount of money in credits to the industry that we currently give, and that we'd be wise to ratchet back in some kind of intelligent way the amount of money in our budget for credits. Do you know if the governor's been presented with that information? I mean, the budget you're presenting to us for tax credits is based on existing statute, but do you know if the governor is aware of that information? And if he's not, could you make sure he gets that crucial information?
Ms. Rayfield?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, I'm certain that through the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Revenue, the governor is was very well briefed on the meetings that occurred this fall. I'm certain it's going to be part of the broader discussion that you all have with the executive on any particular changes in our current tax credit or tax structure.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. Ms. Rayfield, do you have any comments on the Senate Bill 162, the mental health budget?
Mr. Chairman, my comments generally included the discussion with the Mental Health Trust. Of course, we work very closely with the Trust, particularly in the areas of health and social services and the projects and programs that they're very supportive for beneficiaries of the Trust. So that's incorporated in this general overview.
Thank you. With that, that will conclude our oversight on Senate Bill 160, 161, 162, and 163, the capital budget, the operating budget, the mental health budget, and the general obligation bonds. The members of this committee will be looking forward to working with the administration to provide the services that the people of Alaska have gone to expect. This committee, I believe, is probably one of the more seasoned finance committees in state history. Many of them have been on this committee close to 10 years, and others that are new are brought well up to speed. So we're looking forward to working with you and getting input from the people of Alaska to pass a budget that the people expect from the services from the state of Alaska. With that, we are adjourned.